Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubikin.
Good morning. I'm J. Marie Schaefer.
J. Marie and I are sitting 6 feet away from each other in the studio. Hi, J. Marie. We're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every weekend to talk about estate planning and Medicaid planning and something called crisis planning, excuse me. And sometimes we're scaring you with some stories. Sometimes we're hopefully just getting you prepared, J. Marie. And we'd love for you to be a phone. I can't speak this morning, J. Marie. Something's going on.
Tough night last night.
You had to leave your liquid outside of the studio. Yes, That's why. You're all discombobulated.
Well, 518-476-5900 can get us recombobulated. We had no callers last week, Jamie, Harry and I.
None? That's terrible.
And I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, absolutely.
We had a lot of good talking points.
The conversation was really good. I think a lot of times it just makes people think. And to pick up the phone and call may not happen, but that call to Herzog is the one that happens. That next week, after they've thought about it for a day or two and say, we haven't been in to see Herzog in 10 years. We really should do it every five, or when something big happens. Maybe we should do that. Sure. And then that triggers the phone call.
Well, I'm a big podcaster. Jane Marie, I assume you are too. You drive a lot.
Do you
listen to podcasts?
I don't. I'm usually listening to this.
Okay.
So just to make sure everything's okay.
So, you know, you don't call into a podcast. It's just listening. And if it's a good podcast, you just end up listening and listening. So
that's true.
Doesn't want to hang on every word that Harry says? So there you go.
Exactly. Well, hopefully we do have callers this week only because, we want to help you. And Ben's exactly right. The more you can give us feedback, the better we're at our jobs. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm good. I'm still kind of looking around the studio.
It's been a while.
Weird to be back here. Yeah.
Last week was the first time I was here in quite some time. I think there was one time after the pandemic we were here, maybe Harry and I. But it's so nice to see your face.
It is.
It's nice to not interrupt you all the time. I'm so sorry for 2 years of interrupting you.
Same here. I know. It's just nice to see you and see Ben and be in the studio.
And I think we did a good job by asking for callers because we might already have one here. So we'll just kind of hang out for a moment.
That's true.
One of these Saturdays, though, Jamie, we're going to talk about how beautiful it is outside. We're going to talk about how nice spring is and all these fun plans we have after the show.
That won't be today.
Today's not the day.
No.
It is wet out there.
I
had plans to golf and that happened.
No.
Nothing.
There was flooding on the banks of the Hudson River. I saw when I was driving up 787. I've really never seen it that high.
Well, there's nowhere for the water to go.
No.
And then, I stopped by the office earlier this morning. That we still have those giant piles of snow. So, we should have some sort of contest as to when does that giant pile of snow outside our office finally go away. But first, we have Joan from Niskayuna. Good morning, Joan. How are you?
Good. I'm not sure if you're familiar with, apparently the law keeps changing, a Medicare set-aside for settlements?
Somewhat. That has to do with a personal injury lawsuit, right?
Okay. Because I had been injured and had surgery and, different things. And I just retired. I have really good insurance. I have Blue Shield. And I'm nervous to go forward for a settlement. I would just as soon not do anything because I'm very nervous about this Medicare set aside.
One of the things, Joan, I think Jamie, you think the same way here. Maybe this is a non-radio discussion to have look at all the moving parts because it's not as simple as you do it or you don't, you enter into a settlement or you don't. There are these moving parts, and I think Jamie would want to know a lot more about the fact pattern, and I don't think those facts would be appropriate for the radio.
Okay, so I'll call the office.
I would say, Joan, I think your instincts are right in that you should at least get all your information, your ducks in a row, before you make any big decisions here.
Yeah, yeah, because I just don't want to rock the boat down the road if I have other issues, and I have really, really good insurance, so I don't want to, you know, along with Medicare, I have good insurance, so I just don't want to. Anyway, I'll call the office.
Sounds
thank you
good.
So much.
Thanks so much for your call.
Great, thank
okay,
you.
Bye-bye.
And we have Jim in Burns Hills. Good morning, Jim.
What is going on this morning? Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. I know you talked a lot about gifting, but I would like to have you explain it a little bit more. And how do you use it, and when do you use it, and what is the paperwork involved?
So I want to ask you a question. What do you mean by gifting? So what kind of – give me some more details.
Say we have our we have a trust, and then we have money in the savings account that at some point of well, we go into a nursing home – how do we gift that money out so it doesn't end up in the nursing home?
So that's a great question. And if you already have a trust, the best way to do this is to gift additional money into the trust. And do you have a trust bank account?
No. And what do you mean a trust bank account? How does that work? I have a bank account with... the trustee's name on it, or the trustee's name on it, along with myself and my wife.
So, do you have a trust? You set up a trust, and you have
yes.
a trustee of the trust.
Yes.
And so, is it what we would call like this Medicaid asset protection trust? Did you set it up to protect your assets in case you have these long term care needs?
Yes.
Okay. So, a lot of
but
times,
yes, sir. But I have money in a savings account that isn't in the trust.
Okay. So when we create a trust, when Jane Marie sits with you and creates a trust, she looks at your assets. She will never, ever tell you to put everything into the trust. We want you to have some assets outside. And, you know, maybe later on today, Jane Marie will talk about retirements and where what role they have. But when it comes to bank accounts, we do want you to keep your checking and maybe even your savings and have a modest amount of money in there. We know that we could have tens of thousands of dollars between a applicant and their spouse and still be able to qualify for Medicaid. But we also don't want to have too much in there where if there's some bad event for one of our spouses, we're left with a single individual who's, you know, well below. But if you have, you know, and then you don't have to talk about it on the radio here, but if you have tens of thousands of dollars in a savings account, that by itself isn't a bad thing. And if you or your wife needed a nursing home, that money may still be protected because it's exempt. So
how is it exempt?
So and a single individual could have $16,800 of quote unquote resources and still qualify for the program. Their spouse, if they have a spouse, could have around $76,000 or so. So you add those two up, it's about 91 grand that you could have, a little more than 91 grand.
And what happens if you have more than that?
Well, if you have more than that, then you're not going to qualify for the program. And I think that's where Jane Marie was going with maybe you should put some more things in the trust. Is that what you're saying, Jane Marie?
Yeah, that's right. I was saying that you should set up a trust bank account if you don't have one, or if you have one, you should add some more money into the, that trust account.
Now, how do you set up a bank trust account?
That is, your trustee is going to have to go because the trustee is the person who can sign on that bank account. And
right.
you take the trust, and then you take the memorandum of trust to the bank, and that has an EIN number. So the bank account's going to be set up with a separate number for the trust. It won't use your Social Security number. And then you set up, it's just like a regular bank account. It's just that the trust owns it. And then after you set that up, you can move money into that account.
Okay, and how do you move it out of it if you need it?
That's the tricky part.
Oh, so the trust that you set up is a quote-unquote irrevocable trust, but it still
right.
is a trust where you could access the money. You would just use your, you know, the interested parties in the trust to help you do that, and that's a New York law concept. That doesn't work where Jane Marie lives.
No.
It's not a Massachusetts thing. And so if you're planning, you know, we want to be smart about this, so if you happen to want your own money from your own trust, I think that's very reasonable. And we could always do something called a partial revocation to pull it out. It's a piece of paper that we have signed by all the interested parties to the trust. And you go ahead and pull some money out. Now, ideally, we already have a decent amount of money already outside the trust. And as we're planning and meeting with clients and telling them, okay, you know, I'm going to circle this and tell you this asset should go into the trust. I'm going to put an X next to your checking account. Leave that outside the trust. As we're doing that, we ask you, well, you know, do we have any big expenses coming up? Anything foreseeable? Do you need a new truck? Are we going to do some modifications to your home? So, you know, how do we put money into a trust? It's simple. Jamrie just outlined it. How do we take it out? Relatively simple, as I outlined it. Should it go in to begin with is the question, and that depends on, you know, life and what other expenses you have coming up. And we don't want to put something in to only pull it out if we know it's going to happen, because, Jamrie, that money in terms of a nursing home is not protected until 5 years have gone by. Mm-hmm. In case of home care, well, it could be protected immediately. So a couple moving parts here. But it sounds like you have more money than that $91,000 I mentioned. And if it's a lot more, it may be a good idea to put some more in the trust. I mean, you paid money for the trust. You might as well use it as much as you can.
Okay. I understand.
Thanks for the call.
All right, great.
Thank you very much.
So that was a great question. Yeah, we always talk with clients about what to fund the trust and kind of think about your expenses. And also that you can fund it over time. Right, a lot of people start off by putting their home in the trust and not any money because they're younger, right? And then as they get older and don't need as much of the funds, you can add more money to the trust. You just have to remember that the five-year penalty period starts when you add that additional money.
So, Jamrie, what's your style? Like, what do you normally recommend people leave outside the trust? Is there a certain amount?
I think it kind of depends on their age, right? A lot of people set up these trusts in their 60s, which is young, I think, by my standards.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those people usually only put a house in the trust.
Right.
And not much money.
And I guess what I'm asking is, what is an amount of money that you would say this is excessive to leave this amount of money outside the trust?
I think once we're heading north of 200,000, maybe.
Oh wow! Okay, so for me, I usually say around 100 because
that's the exempt amount.
We were talking the other day on the radio that I look at the lows of the temperatures for the day to see how the day is going to be. I always think of what happens if instead of two spouses, it goes down to one, and that next moment, I have a single individual with a $16,800 exemption. So 200 makes me nervous.
No, not if you're 65 and you just retired and you're going to travel the world. You know.
Well, that's absolutely true. Yeah, no, for sure. It's so where I come from on it is it takes so darn long to protect the money, and it seems pretty easy to unprotect the money, right? Mm-hmm. As the caller asked, I put it in, fine. Now, how do I get it out? Relatively easy process, right? We got to get a couple signatures. Maybe we're amending a trust to make it easier to get signatures. But you're going to get the money, so I feel like we could unprotect pretty easily, but protecting it, it could take some time.
Well, true. And as you get a bit older, you want to be aware of that five-year period. So,
I was trying to think of what I wanted to talk about this morning, and for some reason, I thought about, you know, it used to be this whole running social media article thing that Tom Cruise is like, how much older is Tom Cruise than Wilford Brimley was in The Cocoon? Because Wilford Brimley was 49 years old in that, and he plays, you know, a senior citizen in a nursing home, basically, in a retirement home. And when you say 60s and someone's doing this trust in their 60s, that is really young.
Yeah.
It truly is. I mean, 60 is not a big deal.
No, you may not need a nursing home for another 20, 25 years. I mean, that's... If you're 60, right?
You're running marathons. You're you're exercising. You're doing your CrossFit. You have a Peloton at home or something. It's not it's so not a big deal compared to what it used to be.
Right.
You know, the we've said this before, the Golden Girls, Ben, Golden Girls.
Yes.
They were in their early 50s, except for Sophia, the mom, who
was
in
like
her 70s.
1,000.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And actually her real age was probably in her 50s and 60s.
She was the youngest.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
Of them.
Yep.
But she was, you know, her story was she was in a retirement community and she went back to live with her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
but she was 79 years old. That's mm-hmm.
still not bad.
That's really still, not bad.
I mean, because you still got, you know, 15, 20 years to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, when I was 20, 50 was ancient. Mm-hmm. Now that I will turn 60 in December, you're not even getting going until you're 80.
But, you know,
that's why you smiled when I said the 60s.
Exactly. Because right. I was thinking of myself. I'm going to be there in, you know, a few months.
That's right.
Well, I think about how active my father-in-law is with my kids and how active my parents are with my kids. And they're on the back half of their 70s. Mm-hmm. So to think that Sophia from the Golden Girls was
79,
it blows my mind. And and that she's depicted as this
ancient
person.
Lady.
Yeah.
Right.
It's pretty remarkable. We talked about very, very briefly retirement and kind of this idea of funding the trust. And so the types of things you put in the trust, Jamarie, what kind of stuff are you looking at to put into a trust to begin with?
So non-retirement accounts, which interestingly enough. So you're going to look at investment accounts, you know, stocks or bonds or mutual funds, CDs perhaps, or savings accounts, if you have excess funds that you're not spending. But for a lot of our clients, their biggest wealth is in their retirement account.
Right.
And their house, right? So those are the two largest assets they have. And your retirement account is exempt for Medicaid purposes.
So when I say that in a consult, they say, the client says, you mean they can't touch it? And it's like, well...
Yeah, well, but, right?
They can kind of touch it. But the really big headline is that when we have a $16,800 resource cap, or you know, 90 grand for a couple, and it doesn't include retirement, that's really important. Because if it includes retirement, well, then no one's ever going to qualify for the program.
I mean, right.
And I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like the reason why the rules are like that, it just makes sense to me, is they want to promote people saving for retirement.
True.
We'll get back to that in a second, because we have Barbara in Delmar. Good morning, Barbara. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you this morning?
Good. What's up?
Well, I have a trust, and my home is in the trust. I'm thinking I will probably sell the house within the next 3 to 4 years, and I'm wondering how the fact that it's in a trust will affect the capital gains exclusion when I sell it.
That's a great question. So you know already about the capital gains exclusion. So just
yes.
for listeners who may not know, when you sell your home, if there's a capital gain, and the gain is the difference between what you bought the house for and what you sell it for, right? Normally that would be taxable. But when it's your principal residence, the first $250,000 of gain is exempt. Now your question is, does it make a difference if it's in a trust? And it doesn't, because of the type of trust that we do. Well, it's a grantor trust for tax purposes. So that means all the tax benefits that you would normally have stay the same. So if you sell the house in the trust, you're not going to have any taxes due. You'll be able to use that principal residence exclusion.
Wonderful. Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
What a perfectly, it's like it was an arranged phone call, I feel like.
I know, that's right.
That was a perfect question, Barbara.
Well, she said that. She said, she said she wanted to talk to Jamarie, so obviously it was set up.
Oh, my God.
You know.
Did she say?
She comes in once in 2+ years, and all of a sudden we're setting her up. So.
Well, that's so right. You'll laugh at this. We have a client, Jamarie, who is an avid listener. She's listening right now. I know it. And every now and then she'll call, but she'll call under a different name and different location. And I didn't realize this until she came in a couple months ago. And she said, I always listen to you guys. It's great. And that was very nice of her to say. And she said, I call every now and then. And I said, you do? I don't remember you calling. She said, well, I use a different name and location. And I said, well, what are some of the names and locations that you gave me? It's like sports radio where you hear the same call, but it's just so funny.
Right.
I know answering the phone because it pops up with the name.
Oh.
And Barbara actually is Barbara because that's what it was. But there'll be other ones that come through and it'll say Jim, blah, blah, blah. And they'll go Joe. I'm like, and it throws me off because I can't really look at that. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
Well, as luck would have it, her name is actually Barbara.
Maybe she decided to call in
as Barbara.
That's right.
Oh my goodness. That's too funny.
That's good.
So Jamie, you were saying what you would put in, right? These non-retirement assets. Mm-hmm. So clients always ask, so I'm going to ask on their behalf to you. So what do we do with all our retirement assets?
So they have to stay in your own name. So they have a tax deferred status, right? So they need to stay in your own name. They're taxable when you withdraw from them. So some client, well, why can't I put it in the trust? Well, you can't, because you'd have to pay tax on the entire amount if you withdrew it and put it into the trust.
And so that's because an individual retirement account, an IRA, cannot right. be in the name of a trust. Now, you can name a trust as a beneficiary, and it gets a little more complicated. We're not talking mm-hmm. about that.
Right.
In terms of someone creates a trust, and they want to know what they're going to put in it, usually it's real estate, real estate, real estate. Mm-hmm. Make sure we're avoiding probate. And then we put monies in that you're not planning on touching for a while. You know, mm-hmm. you're not buying that truck in mm-hmm. 2 months, right? Those right. monies we want to put in to start to protect them. Depending on which attorney you meet with, apparently, you may be told 200 or 100 or 150.
Right.
I don't actually know what Harry's number is. I'd be curious mm-hmm. to know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But with the retirements, you know, you're going to continue to... save, ideally. You're eventually going to take distributions either when you want to or the government will make you at 72. And then those distributions are income. You're mm-hmm. reporting them on your tax return. So that's where Medicaid comes back into the picture.
Right, because they're counted as your income. So if you're, for example, if you're in the nursing home, we're talking about that, Medicaid takes all of your income. And income includes those IRA distributions. So although you may be losing that income from the IRA, presumably there's going to be a balance left when you pass away, and that's still going to go to your beneficiaries.
A couple things. It's going to avoid probate as it right. goes to your beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. And it's also going to, I lost my train of thought because I see Judy's calling, and I need
that's
to hear
right.
from Judy from South Glens Falls. Hi, Judy. How are you?
Good. Good morning. How are you?
I tried to go on with my sentence, but I saw your name and I couldn't.
You lost
track. I couldn't keep you waiting.
Thank you. I'm calling because we are trying to protect our home and have that go to our children. Our other big assets are in retirement accounts. So if I'm understanding what you talked about earlier, that would be the thing that we would probably want to protect. And our lawyer, where we used to live, we spoke to him about that, and he sent us something called a quitclaim deed. So I wanted to ask about quitclaim deeds versus warranty deeds, and I also wondered if that capital gains exclusion is something that could be used if we were to sell after deeding our home to our children with a quitclaim deed.
Okay, so there's a lot to tackle, and we have a break coming up in a couple minutes. So we're going to talk about all the real estate stuff right now. And then I want you to listen a lot on the second half, because we're going to get back into that retirement question and what actually would go into your trust if you did one. So
okay.
Jamie, I'll start with quitclaim deed versus warranty deed, and
sure.
then you can go with capital gains exclusion.
Sure.
Okay. So if I was going to sell Ben the Brooklyn Bridge, I would use a quitclaim deed.
Thank you.
Yes. Because Ben would receive all of my interest in the Brooklyn Bridge.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds great.
It sounds great.
What can go wrong?
Yeah. What could happen? Yeah. What could possibly happen?
So because I don't actually own any part of the Brooklyn Bridge, technically I could have done that.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, Ben.
All right.
A warranty deed is saying that I'm giving a warrant. I'm saying I own this property. I'm giving you all my interest in it, but also I own it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if someone's buying a house, that it's almost always going to be a warranty deed. Mm-hmm. And if someone is doing a transfer to their kids or a transfer to their spouse, it's almost always going to be a quitclaim deed, because it shouldn't be that difficult. And we already own the house, and we all mm-hmm. agree we own the house. And here it is, trust. Here it is, kids. Now, a quitclaim deed can get the job done if it's a deed to this a Medicaid trust. It can get the job done if it's a deed to your kids where you retain a life use. The mm-hmm. pros and cons of doing that are rather, you know, there's a wide range of pros and a very wide range of cons on it. So normally we want people to do a trust, and even though we do trust and it sounds very self-serving, one of the reasons why is because we want you and your husband to always be able to control things. We want you to be able to sell your property in a couple of years if you feel like it. We want you to not depend on your kids doing okay. We don't want your kids to be vested owners of a piece of property so that their creditors, their incapacity to their death can impact how the house is owned and so on. During your life, you're paying all the bills in either event. So there's this, you know, the life estate deed that he probably sent you creates a legal life estate. The trust that we do creates a legal life use. Two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. Both, you know, you're getting the STAR exemption, you're paying all your bills, you have exclusive use and occupancy. You could decide to sell your house. But the logistics that go into how that house is sold, you know, where does the money go? What are the tax implications? Well, we got to listen to Jamie for that part.
That's where there's a big difference between the deed and the trust. I don't know if you were listening before and about the lady's question. If your house is in a trust and you sell it, then you get the benefit of the capital gains exclusion.
Yes, that was one of my questions.
Right. Yeah. So you do if it's in a trust, right? But if it's a deed to your children, then when you sell it, you don't get the capital gains exclusion. Right, because the children are part owners of that. And even worse than that, your children are going to get the majority of the proceeds from the sale. So they split the proceeds between you and your children, and they base it on a percentage, and there's a percentage assigned for your life use based on your age. And it's a lot smaller than you would think. So sometimes clients are only getting 10% of the money from the sale, and the rest is going to their kids.
Mm-hmm. So, Judy, what number does your age start with?
Six. My husband will start with seven shortly.
Tell him congratulations on that joyous event that's coming up. So even at that age, if you did a life estate deed, you probably own a minority interest in your home going forward, because, you know, your life estate ends when you end, and every year your life estate gets smaller.
Right.
And the interest that your kids have gets bigger. And so it's based on life expectancies and so on. We like you having access to 100% of the proceeds from the sale of your property. We don't want to depend on your kids giving you back your own money. We don't want them to be asked, pretty please, will you please sign this deed so I could sell my own home that you grew up in, and so on and so forth. So we like the autonomy and the control part. There's a whole retirement aspect to it, but we'll get to it after the break. And thanks so much for your call, Judy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, it is 8:30. We'll take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Well, good morning. We're back. My name is Dave Kabikian.
And my name is Jane Marie Schaefer.
Jamarie and I have been trying to talk about estate planning and Medicaid planning, but everyone keeps calling, Jamarie.
I know, that's crazy. That's great, but it's wonderful also.
It's obviously because Jamarie is here.
I know.
She has not been in studio in over 2 years.
She wanted
to get caught up.
She is the magic.
That's right.
We're going to get back to the retirement story and trust funding, but we do have another phone call. Helen in Sand Lake. Good morning, Helen. How are you?
Good morning. I hope I didn't miss the answer to my question. But it has to do with the lady who called earlier. If a house is in an estate, it's your personal residence, and you move into a nursing home, the house is sold by the estate. Is that $250,000 exclusion still available?
So,
is it still considered a personal residence, or is it now owned by the trust?
Okay, very good question. So you mentioned owned by the estate. I think you meant owned by the trust. So there's a house in a trust.
Exactly.
And then someone needs to be in a nursing home. And then eventually the property sells.
So correct.
When the property is in this trust where you have this legal life use and you're responsible for everything and you have exclusive use and occupancy, the rules when it comes to that capital gains exclusion still apply so long as they apply if there was no trust. And what I mean is that rule is based on that property being your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years.
It's the occupancy test.
Correct. So if you pass the occupancy test, we're good. If you don't, we're not good. So an example of where we wouldn't be good is someone's in a nursing home for 4 years, and then the property gets sold. Regardless of whether it was still in their name or whether it was in a trust, it does not matter because they don't abide by the occupancy requirements. It's not true that it was their primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years. They were responsible for it for all of those years, but they weren't an occupier of it if their residence has officially changed.
Thank goodness. The occupancy test is perfect in this case, and it's a relief, I'm sure.
Good.
Very good.
Thank you so much. Okay.
No
problem. Bye-bye.
Now, Jamarie, did I get that right?
Yeah.
Okay, because even though you're financially responsible for the property, you actually aren't living there. And a rental property is something you're financially responsible for, and you don't get that benefit. So I still think it's the residency. The question to me is sometimes, you know, when we have a client who is in assisted living for a little bit, and now they need to go to a nursing home, the county we're applying in is usually the county back from where they used to reside. Unless,
their home.
Yeah, because
right.
it's sometimes there's a difficulty in ascertaining exactly where was your residence. Was the assisted living just a temporary thing or not?
Right, that's true. But for this, it's that you occupied it 2 out of the 5 years, and I like that because it gives you time. If you move out into a nursing home, it gives you some time to sell the house because it's not always going to be sold, you know, right after you move into the nursing home.
So we were going to talk about retirement, but I feel like we should maybe, you know, hammer how awful life estates could be. which route would you like to go, Jamarie?
We could talk about the life estates a little bit, sure.
So people hear this a lot. They say, well, I heard, or my friend just deeded, they just gave their kids their house and they didn't have to set up a trust, right? All it was a house and a bunch of retirement accounts. So the only thing that was going to go in the trust was a house. Trusts seem like they're expensive. So I don't want to do that. I'm going to just deed the house to my kids.
Well, that's not a great idea. And let me tell you why.
Please.
Okay. So you deed the house to your kids. They're grown-ups now, right? And your daughter gets, well, first of all, you have to imagine her married, right?
But now, is this actually me that I have to think about this?
This is you we're talking about, yes.
Jamarie, she's 8.
Okay, well,
give me some time here. I can't.
She's 25 and she's married, right?
Okay.
Okay. Can you visualize that?
I can.
Okay.
There will not be enough tissues in the world for my face on her wedding day.
Oh,
that's
boy.
For sure. I'm welling up right here, right now.
Well, now you're going to cry even more because now she's getting divorced.
Oh, Jamarie.
I know.
Ouch.
I'm sorry. I'm just... making you cry.
We
today.
Need some callers here. I don't like where this is going at all. Okay, so yes, I'm following.
Okay. Now she's getting divorced and she's in the middle of a divorce fighting over property.
Yeah.
And they say, well, you own, you know, half of your father's house.
Your father's house.
That's right.
That's my house. Yes, I, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's all about, like, we're control freaks, I think. Mm-hmm. Everyone, I think, is. Ben, mm-hmm. Ben certainly is a control. Oh, my God, you can't touch anything around here.
I figured out in the last 20-plus years of being on this radio station that I have a certain routine, and when it's not there, I'm in big trouble.
We have to ask Ben if we could sit in our chairs.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank, thanks, Ben.
Till 8:58:48.
So, and Ben, so you wouldn't want to have to ask permission of anyone to be able to sell your own home. That's silly.
No, would not want to have to do that.
And you don't have to, because if you have a trust, which I think you have a trust, then you don't have to do that. You tell your trustee what to do. Well, what's the difference, right? I got to ask them to sign the deed at the closing when I want to sell your house. The difference is you know, whether you order someone to do something or you don't, right? If you're one of those, you know, rich and famous people, you have someone driving your car around, mm-hmm. or it's just an Uber, right? Whatever. You get to pick where you're going. You're in control, even though you're not driving the car, Jamboree. You're the boss.
That's right.
And I like being the boss. Mm-hmm. You like being the boss. Ben, mm-hmm. you like being the boss.
I do.
Mm-hmm. The point is, it's your home. Mm-hmm. And even though it may all work out and everyone agreed, no, we all get along great, Jamboree, mm-hmm. right? We're all going to agree to sell the house, and then they're all going to agree that we're going to get the money mm-hmm. at the close. These are transfers that are taking place. They're technically gifts back from your kids. Mm-hmm. And when things are okay, when you're alive, well, then you don't need a will because you're still alive. But right. when bad things start to happen, you got to then go back to your language and the documents. You got to make sure that you have all the rights and so on.
Well, here's something. So in the trust, you can change your trustee if they're, you know, like how they're managing things.
Yeah.
Once you deed your house to your kids, that can't be undone unless the kids agree to it.
In fact, I have a guardianship fact pattern where one of the underlying facts was that dad, about a decade ago, did a life estate deed in favor of some of his kids. And then he met with an elder law attorney who said, well, you know what? You really should have done a trust. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, well, I'll do a trust. And the kids didn't agree to deeding the house back to dad to put in the trust. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why no one agreed to it, but they didn't agree. He actually went to court. This is a decade ago. He took his children to court to try to force them to give the property back. Mm-hmm. And he lost.
Right.
I have mm-hmm. the written opinion from that judge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, holy cow, even, you know, like when it works out, great. But literally, he had to sue his kids to get his house back, and he lost.
I'm not surprised, because there's really no legal obligation for them to give it back to him.
That's what the court opinion said. You got nothing here.
There's nothing. When you gifted it to the kids, when you put their name on the deed, that was done after you signed the deed.
Right.
You can't change your mind.
Now, life estates aren't all bad. I mean, we did one for my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do a trust for him, right? How hypocritical.
Right.
Well, he was 90.
Mm-hmm.
He was a widower.
Mm-hmm.
My mother is an only child.
Mm-hmm.
He was never leaving the house he was in.
Right.
If you went into the house, you would not think he touched anything in the house. Everything was from the late 60s, Ben. Everything.
Wow.
The TV was a Zenith.
Mm-hmm.
It John probably weighed
8,000 pounds.
Weighed probably, yeah, uh-huh. 800 pounds probably.
Right.
This wooden box with a TV in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It had that, the record player I've been talking about, the plays 45s.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That was that, talk about heavy. That's.
Oh, yeah.
But he was never going to sell that house. It was going to end when he ended,
right?
So a life estate deed made all the sense in the world, but mm-hmm. also because there weren't any other assets to protect. It was only retirement accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So back to retirement.
And only one child. Also.
And only one child.
That helps a lot, too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So in a fact pattern, Jamie, where someone has just a house and they don't have any CD savings bonds, large savings accounts, it's just retirement. They're going to hear, well, retirement's exempt. It's just a house. I don't plan on even living in this house mm-hmm. 4 more years from now. But it still makes sense to create a trust and put the house into the trust.
Absolutely, because you keep the capital gains exclusion. What we didn't talk about is you also get a step up in basis. When you die and the house is in the trust, the basis of that house becomes equal to its value at your date of death.
Yeah.
So then when your children sell it, they have no gain.
Absolutely. Right. And when you do sell your house during your life, because you're going to be around for a while and you're planning on selling it, the proceeds from that sale are in the trust. If you want to pull it out and do a partial revocation, you can. And you could, you know, go on a trip or do whatever you want to do. But more importantly, it's now protected. If you did a life estate deed and your kids are fantastic and everyone agrees we're selling mom and dad's house 4 years from now, part of the problem is you don't get all the money. Right, we just talked about that. That's the kids own more of it. The other part of the problem is you get some of the money.
Right.
So if it's mom's not doing well, she needs a nursing home, we are going to sell that property, right? We had a caller before. That property was in a trust when it's going to sell. The proceeds will be 100% protected because it's in the trust. It, you know, when I wish I could draw a circle. Well, I'm drawing a circle with my finger.
He's drawing it in the air. I can see.
I'm drawing it in the air, just in case Jane Marie, the most knowledgeable attorney I know, doesn't know how a trust works.
Here, and that's Jane Marie, left to right on your radio as you're watching Dave do that.
Yes, thanks.
So you put a house in, but it's just money that looks like a house. That's all. Mm-hmm. And then you sell it, and it looks like money. That's money. And then eventually you could downsize, buy another property. It's all interchangeable, and it's all protected, or it continues to accrue protection, I guess is the right way to say it. So on one end, you don't get all your money if you do a life estate deed and you sell it. Mm-hmm. On the other end, sometimes we don't want you to get any money because you got a foot in the nursing home.
That's right.
And now you have more of a resource.
So if you're a visual learner and you come in to meet with Dave, he likes to use the whiteboard.
The whiteboard.
Just saying, the whiteboard he really likes. Yeah.
It's fun.
When it's not falling on him. So
that's true. That's true.
Did you tell some story?
Yes. That you're trying to take me down.
Yes. Oh. Heavy paintings and things like that attacking him.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
No.
It didn't work.
He's still here.
Mm-hmm. I'm not allowed to hang anything up in the office ever again, apparently.
You could be our 16th caller of the hour.
It's been great for today. Mm-hmm. It's been great. Feels like old times, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
518-476-5900. We'd love to get your calls. Jimmy, I think it's not too early to talk about the webinar schedule for later this month. We have a busy month, right? There's next week is what, Good Friday, then we have Easter.
Good Friday and Easter, right? And then a lot of kids are on vacation the week after that.
I'm on vacation.
And you're on vacation because your kids are on vacation.
Yeah. Right?
So we have our webinars this month on the last week of the month, starting on April 25th. So on Monday, April 25th at 2 o'clock, how to identify and stop the most common financial tricks and scams. And that's a popular one. There's so many scams out there. And this really helps you learn how to identify them and how to protect yourself from them. Tuesday, April 26th at 2 is aging in place. Very popular. How do you stay home and not go into a nursing home as you age? Wednesday, April 27th at 2 o'clock is Medicaid and estate planning myths. Thursday, April 28th at 2 o'clock is what to do when a loved one dies. And on Friday, April 29th is wills versus trusts. And you can register for them right on our website at herzoglaw.com. There's very easy. Click here to register to sign up.
I can't tell you how many people have watched them, particularly before they meet us.
Yes.
And it's a very weird thing when you meet someone who already has seen you and heard you,
mm-hmm.
and you've never seen them. You've never heard them at all. And they, you know.
Yesterday I had a call with her, and she said, I've watched, you know,
I've watched you for hours.
And she says, I think I know all about trust. She's like, just quiz me, you know.
Oh,
she was
so
like
funny.
Challenging me. It was funny.
It's funny. Well, sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. We do the same thing and anything else, right? If you know, I like golfing. If I'm going to buy a golf club or something, I'm you know, going to do research on it. I'm going to look at. I'm going to watch a little videos about it or something, or someone's review online, and you know, like, so it makes sense to kind of, you know.
Yeah, I look at YouTube videos of chicken coops. You know.
Excuse me now. Come again. Chicken coops.
Chicken coops, yeah. It's very popular now to have fancy chicken coops for your chickens.
For your chickens, yes, because who doesn't have chickens?
They're my daughters.
Oh, they are your daughters.
They are my daughters.
They don't belong to your daughters because you don't have daughters.
No, I have sons. So I have five girls. It's really nice.
I think the webinars are a really nice way to just introduce yourself to some of these things. Because if you, an hour consult, it's not like we're, you know, just hanging out and talking about your, you know, how are you? It's like from the first minute in, it's a lot of information and overwhelming information.
That's right. And if you're coming in for the first time to hear about trust, you know, sometimes it may take a second meeting kind of really understand everything.
At what point did you realize in your life that trust didn't mean there's lots and lots of money? Like, I always thought trust fund growing up.
Right.
So if someone had a trust, they have a trust.
They're fancy and rich, right? Yeah.
But that's not what trust is, right? A trust is in, you know, if you have a house that you value and you paid off the mortgage, even if you didn't pay off the mortgage, but in particular when you know, it's a place that you've put all your hard-earned bucks in, you want to protect it. You should do a trust. Or if the fact pattern's appropriate, maybe you get away with a life estate deed. Probably not, but it's possible. I actually said to a client, Jay Marie, a week and a half ago down in Kingston, you could do a life estate deed, but it's not going to be done here. Because it was such an, it was, she was in her late 50s and he was, I think, 62. And I said, no, guys, just do a basic will, power attorney, healthcare proxy, and don't die for a while compared to doing a life estate deed, please. Because it's such a,
it's eventually, you're too young to do it, right?
Because they may have 2-3 more homes.
Right.
And no matter what you say about, no, this is what's going to happen. Right. Well, if you're never going to be in a nursing home, well, then I guess you don't do any planning. But that's not what happens. You say that.
Right.
I'm never going to get old. Yeah, sure.
Well, why do we buy car insurance, right? Hopefully you're never going to be in a
We're required to by law.
Well, anyway. It's
a bad example.
Haven't you always said that not planning is a plan, right?
It's a form of, New York State has a plan for everybody. If you don't have a plan, we know what's going to happen. We'd like to control, you know, we're control freaks. I want to control things. I want to know what's going
to
happen.
To chance, right?
Hey, listen, we're pro-plan all the time. So if your plan is long, my parents' plan is long-term care insurance and then a revocable trust. Sounds great. I wouldn't do it, but sounds fantastic, and I'm very lucky that they have it, right?
That's right.
Any plan can work as long as it's based off of the right information, the right intel. That's why was one of the webinars the myths?
The myths, yes.
What day is that one again?
The myths is on Wednesday, April 27th.
That's one of my personal favorites. It's so light and fluffy, but it covers a lot of, you know, the 10 things that you always get wrong.
Right. For example, that the look back period is 7 years. I don't know where people get that from.
I don't know.
I constantly come.
5 years. It's five years.
Of course.
Yeah.
Even Ben knows 5 years.
Even I know it's five years.
Well, Ben, literally, we should decide what week to take off. And Ben, you could do the entire program.
I wouldn't mind doing it with Harry. I think that would be fun.
I think
if you guys took the week off, I could do that.
You would only want to do it with Harry?
No, I'd like to do it with all three of you, but you guys aren't going to have me talk. I'm just going to be quiet over here.
But we're saying you know so much about this from absorbing it.
I've really tried hard to pay attention. I'm still waiting for that 2.5-year look back, which is supposed to start in July and never will. So.
That's on the list of topics. But
that's amazing, Ben.
So, you know, when it was supposed to change October 1st of 2020, January, I remember every single week we were talking about it. We were bringing it up. We were saying if you're on the fence, if your loved one kind of sort of needs long-term care, apply for this program early, get the approval, be early on this because the rules are going to change. And we shouted it from the mountaintops.
That's right.
And then what happened?
They extended it.
And then what happened?
And they extended it.
And then what happened?
And then we got, even July 1st is not a hard and fast date, as far as I know, for this year.
And the reason why they extended it was mainly because it's been an unprecedented couple of years.
Right.
Right. And it's becoming a little more normal. I was watching baseball yesterday, lots of fans all over. I went to a 40th birthday party a couple of weeks ago. Things are happening. Life is coming back.
That's right.
And I think the look back period is now a serious thing to deal with.
Yes, that's right. But, you know, it was extended for so long that there's different nuances that are coming out, right? It may not be the same as it was when we first talked about it.
Well, so educate me, because I may not know about these.
Well, so we've been saying, okay, look back period, community, Medicaid. However, there's many different programs under community Medicaid. And one of the programs we call is a waiver program. And so the look back period, the 2.5 year look back, does not apply to that waiver program under community Medicaid. So there's a way around that 2.5 year look back period.
So I'm going to have to ask for the callers, what kind of waiver programs are we talking about?
So it has a really long name, Nursing Home Transition Diversion Program, or NHTD for short. And it's one of the community Medicaid programs that is meant to have people go back home who would otherwise be in a nursing home.
Right.
And so under that program, because you would normally otherwise be in a nursing home, they provide a lot of services to keep you at home. And a lot of our clients do get lots of hours of care under this program. So you're at home and you're getting care under this waiver program, but you don't have to abide by the 2.5 year look back period.
Sounds amazing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are small catches to it, because when you do NHTD, pros, lots of hours, cons, the type of caregiver you use, your options when it comes to caregiving isn't as full as if you did something called Consumer Direct, where you are able to, you know, you have that cousin of yours that's happy to help, and they could be paid by Medicaid. That might be a Consumer Direct kind of fact pattern. Consumer Direct sounds great, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there are some cons. Normally, you don't get as many hours of help under Consumer Direct as you do through one of those waiver programs.
Mm-hmm.
It's complicated.
It's really complicated. Another one is that it takes a long time to get into the waiver program, a little bit longer than regular community.
I don't think I've told you how long it's taken for one of our family members to get their loved one, just the evaluations, the whole process. And, you know, you'd say, well, hold on a second. I do what I do for a living. Doesn't that mean something? Can I go to the front of the line? And maybe it's meant something, because instead of 2-3 months, it's been a month and a half or so. But between, you know, us sounding the alarm, and he was already, the gentleman was already qualified for Medicaid. So just restarting it and then getting the evaluation, and it's a 6-week period, and we were told initially it was going to be 2 to 3 months. So
there's a backlog on those evaluations.
So if the rules may change, they may not change, but they're going to change months from now. The one thing we know for certain is that if you're already approved for Medicaid, the 2.5 year look back period is not going to apply to you no matter what. So if you're out there and you're looking at mom and you're like, well, it's going to happen eventually, and she does need a little bit of help, you could get into the program, have a little bit of help, and then, you know what, Jamrie, when you need more help, instead of starting the process from scratch, it's like a dimmer, right? We're just turning that thing, so a little more care, a little more care, a little more care, and those delays aren't going to be in place. First of all, we have some caregiving structure in place. We are already approved. Medicaid already did its evaluations. They'll, you know, if we need more hours, they'll reevaluate. But at least, you know, we have the foundation of a very good home care plan, because it always sounds so good. Yeah, I'll just get care at home. And then it's like, well, who's going to be the caregiver? How many hours did you get? How do we afford the hours Medicaid doesn't cover? I'd say, you know, and this is something I think you used to say a couple years ago, is if you're close, go ahead, get approved. Submit your application, because the rules are likely to change. And if it's not July, it's going to be October. If it's not October, it's going to be January.
It will change eventually, right?
Yeah.
And also, it's a good idea to apply early when you don't need as much help, because a lot of our clients wait until they're at the point where they're overwhelmed. And it's going to take 3 to 4 months, maybe, at a minimum, to get that help in there.
Yeah. Oh, Harry and I were talking about last week, you know, time is money. Sometimes it's because we need to get that 60th month, that fifth year of the look back to protect your assets. And so if you delayed everything a month in the worst fact pattern, maybe that month cost you because it didn't work out. For home care, same thing. There's delays on everything. you know, legal work costs money. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people think that they could cut some corners. And there's probably some corners you can cut and get away with. Probably. It probably can work mm-hmm. out for you if you're, you know, 20 years old to get a healthcare proxy online. Right. Probably mm-hmm. will work mm-hmm. out. But we say it all the time, the worse the facts are, the more important it is to have a good plan and to have good documents. And that's where we come in. And while certain parts of a Medicaid application, I'm sure you could fill your own name in on the application. You don't need us to do it. There are so many other moving parts to it. And the facts matter so much that, unfortunately, you do need to involve us a little more than you think.
Right. Just knowing all the different programs under community Medicaid to apply for and how to get those evaluations. It's a complicated process, and we help you through all those different pieces of it, get you the right phone numbers to call. Not that there's a secret phone number, but...
Speaking of phone numbers, if you want to register for one of those webinars, mm-hmm. 518-465-7581 mm-hmm. is the phone number to call. You could call our office, or you could email us. That might be even easier, info@herzoglaw.com, or even easier than that, Jamery, mm-hmm. you go to the website, okay. herzoglaw.com. Go to the webinar page, seminar page. Not only can you register for one of those webinars that last week, you don't have to wait until the last week. Mm-hmm. You could listen to last month's or
That's
2 months
right.
ago's
We have pre-recorded webinars on there. So if you want to learn more about any of these topics without waiting to the end of April, you can watch one of those.
We're supposed to, by the way, you and I, we haven't yet. We're supposed mm-hmm. to record like a nice version, like a perfect mm-hmm. version of these webinars
right.
to be the webinar on the website mm-hmm. where, Ben, we have the right background and the borders. And
I think it's perfect just doing it the way you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you need it with all that stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
The starts and the stops and everything else. You're human. That's the way it is.
That's true.
Like the time I ran out of battery power on my laptop.
No, you didn't.
Oops.
Oops.
Oh, we ran out of time here. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.